Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this evening's planning meeting. There are a number of things I would like to remind people before we start with the items on the agenda. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and the sound recording will be made available on the Council's website. Under the Openness of Local Government Bodies regulations, people may film or record this meeting, and this is outside the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that does not disrupt the business of the meeting. Also, so that the meeting is not disturbed, could I ask everyone present to please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to silent. We are not expecting any fire alarm tests this evening, so if the alarms sound, please proceed to the nearest fire exits, which are situated to the side and the rear of the meeting room. Toilets are available and these can be found through the doors at the back and to the side. And can I remind everybody that this is a public meeting, so please conduct yourself in an appropriate manner. Thank you very much indeed. Right, we move on to the agenda. Do we have any apologies?
Yes, Chair, so apologies have been received this evening from Councillor Grimley. Councillor Gerrard will be acting as a sub for him this evening.
Thank you very much. The minutes of the previous meeting, the committee is asked to confirm as a correct record of the minutes of the meeting held on the 30th of January. I'd just like to draw your attention. We have got a slight amendment for which I will need your approval. Under declarations of pecuniary or personal interest, Councillor Snart at our last meeting indicated he had a personal interest in application P19-14572, and he also made a further disclosure regarding application P19-23402. Now, that one was not recorded in the original minutes. So, do I have your approval that you will accept the minutes of that meeting plus this slight amendment?
Yes, Chair. I'll move that.
Thank you. I have no questions under Committee Procedure 12.8. Disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests. Would people please indicate if they have any?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I've got a personal interest in P/19/25594/2. There's two separate items coming up as listed as items 5 and 6 this evening. I'll withdraw from the Chamber.
Councillor Bailey.
Thank you, Chair. With regards to P19/20752, I do have correspondence every now and again from Nampanton Residents Association as there is cross-ward issues, but I have had no correspondence with regards to planning application and I retain an open mind.
Councillor Gerrard.
Thank you, Chair. I belong to a club, a charity club that has interest on item number two, which is, sorry, P/19/2616/2.
Thank you. Is there anybody else? Councillor Snart.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I have a personal interest in items 5 and 6. I know the objector. I have received information that I have shared with the head of service. I have an open mind and will participate in this item.
Anyone else? Councillor Gerrard, you mentioned that you came in under it, that you belong to a club. Do you have an interest in this application or are you here with a clean?
I'm a Rotarian and the satellite club to our Rotary Club used to meet there at the rugby club, which is...
Open mind.
Thank you very much. We'll now move on to the item 5, the actual planning applications. Before we start, what I would like to draw, we've got a slight amendment, well, a couple of slight amendments actually, a slight amendment in the order of business tonight, whereby items P192559, oblique 2, and P192558, oblique 2, 8, will be taken last, and we will move P192587, oblique 2, which is item 7, up to become the new item 5. I think that will become clear as we go through. It's just that Councillor Bentley has said he will be withdrawing anyway for those two items that are now become 6 and 7, so it just makes it more convenient all round. But I will make sure you're all aware of which application we're on. Okay. We now move on to the full agenda and item 1. There is a change there, and in fact that the we have an objector, Mr. Crinan, and a representative from the Parish and Town Council, Councillor Price, and we also have Councillor Shepherd as the ward councillor here. Yeah, now, Mr. William Brearley was going to speak on behalf of the applicant. He will not be speaking at this meeting this evening, and I believe the officers will explain that as to why. So if I could, I will move on to the officers for their report. Thank you. Thank you, Demi.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, everyone. The first item you'll find on page 9 of your agenda, it's P192603. Land adjacent to 102 Warwick Avenue, and it's for the erection of a two-storey dwelling. So this is the application site, which is located on the southern side of Warwick Avenue and was formerly part of the garden to number 102, and which is now fenced off separately. The street is accessed off Woodhouse Lane, and Warwick Avenue is the main road leading through the estate to Craddock Drive and Meeting Street to the southeast. The cul-de-sac of Rumsey Close runs to the rear of the site, and the area is primarily two-storey properties. Members will be aware of an earlier scheme relating to the erection of a dwelling on this plot and the erection of two dwellings to the east of number 102, which members refused under application P182172. This was the subject of an outstanding appeal until this afternoon, when a decision has now been made by the Planning Inspectorate, and it's been decided that the appeal be allowed. So there is a planning permission now for a dwelling on the plot that you are considering this evening. So this is an aerial photo. The plot is just down the left-hand side. There's no mouse, but... just down this side of the 102, with number 106 here. So this is the proposed layout of the development. The two houses shown to the right of 102 are those dwellings granted by Planning Committee under application reference P190971 in August last year. The foundations to those plots have begun, but work has not progressed further pending the discharge of conditions that were attached to those planning that planning permission. So the proposal before members then is the erection of one dwelling to the left of 102, and this broadly follows the same setback within the street as dwellings either side, with car parking proposed to its frontage in a similar arrangement to others within the street. The house would be two-storey with a rear elevation position 27.5 metres from the nearest rear elevation of number 11 Rumsey Close. So the proposal is for the erection of a dwelling as set out in your officer's report. The photograph to the top left shows the excavation of the foundations to the two plots I've just mentioned. The photo to the top right shows the original property and recent works to its frontage to provide car parking. A dropped curb is to be installed here soon, and these works didn't require planning permission. The photograph to the bottom left shows the existing dwelling as altered with the works granted permission under P190268, which included the front extension across the canopy that you'll see, and the alterations to the side elevation, which blocked up the windows. The photo on the bottom right shows the gap where the new dwelling is to be constructed and the side gable to number 106. This is the two-storey dwelling. It would have three bedrooms in total, with one located in the roof space. The height to the first floor eaves would be 5.3 metres and 8.25 metres to the ridge. The construction is to be bricks of a colour to match those on 102 with a tiled roof. And you'll see that the recommendation, the recommended condition number 3 on page 23 of your agenda calls for samples to be submitted and agreed. The house would be identical to one to be erected on the other side of 102, but would be a handed version of it, so a mirror image of one of those plots to the east. So this is the proposed street scene. The image at the top shows the development members permitted last year for the two dwellings to the left of number 102. You can see that roof heights are very similar to the existing or permitted dwellings. You can see that you'll recall the proposal also for the two dwellings included a garage on the plot you're considering this evening, with and that had a games room above it. This is no longer proceeding, and the proposal replaces that garage with the new dwelling, which you can see is a mirror image of the dwelling proposed and labelled as number 98. So it's like a handed version of it. Alternative car parking, as we saw on the previous slide, has now been provided with block paving to the front of 102 under permitted development rights. So the key considerations are the principle of the development. These are set out in your agenda report on page 18, but are also shown on the screen, and I'll summarise each of these as we go through. The starting point for your deliberations this evening is that all planning applications must be decided in accordance with the adopted development plan unless material considerations indicate otherwise. So the principle of development: Quorn is identified as a sustainable location for new housing. The proposal is a small-scale infill scheme which will be in keeping with the pattern of development in the street and wouldn't lead to a significant additional journeys by the private car, as the location of the site is easily accessible to local services and facilities in the village centre and has good access to public transport. The development is considered to also accord with policies in the newly made Quorn neighbourhood plan, and the proposal is therefore acceptable in principle. In terms of housing mix, the neighbourhood plan contained policies which reflected an assessment of local housing need. Policy H3 of the neighbourhood plan sets out a preference for one, two or three bed houses, and homes suitable for older people or for mobility impaired. Dwellings with four bedrooms or more should be the minority across the plan period, which stretches to 2036. So the proposed dwelling is a two-storey, three-bed house and is a modest family home, which would be suitable for occupation by a small or growing family as required by the neighbourhood plan. It's therefore concluded that the design and layout and the scale of the development is in general conformity with the neighbourhood plan when read as a whole. The design and impact in the street scene: you've seen images and plans showing how the development would assimilate into the street scene and relate to neighbouring dwellings. It's considered that the proposed house is of a good quality design, which has previously been acceptable nearby. The proposal is in general accord with plot widths and building heights and positions and would be in keeping with the variety of house types found within the street. Whilst the final choice of materials is to be agreed by planning condition, the dwelling wouldn't be unduly prominent within the street scene, and in these ways the proposal accords with policy CS2 of the core strategy, EV1 of the Borough of Charnwood local plan, adopted supplementary planning document on design, and policy H5 of the neighbourhood plan, and guidelines 4, 5.1 and 5.2 of the Quorn Village design statement, which all relate to the design of new housing development. The proposal is therefore acceptable in these regards. The impact on residential amenity, these considerations are set out in your officer report, and you've seen from the slides that the development achieves minimum recommended separation distances between opposing elevations in order to maintain levels of privacy. The space around the proposed dwelling and its orientation are such that losses of light or overdominance are avoided, and it's considered that the proposal is acceptable in terms of amenity impact. The highway considerations, the site is not only sustainably located but provides an acceptable quantum of parking to meet requirements of policy TR18. Members should be aware that although this policy sets out car parking expectations, these are a starting point, and the location of sites must also be considered to reach a conclusion on what would be an acceptable amount of car parking in a scheme. The proposal provides for two spaces to serve the new dwelling and the loss of the previously approved but not implemented garage to serve number 102 has already been compensated for with the hard surface works that we saw on site today. The proposed vehicle access and car parking for the new dwelling meet the standing advice of the Highway Authority, and there are no tenable highway reasons to reject the application. So the planning balance, finally, the development would contribute towards a 5-year supply of housing, and this is a positive aspect of the scheme. The design proposed is of an acceptable quality and would not result in significant amenity or highway harms, and these matters are therefore neutral in the planning balance. The neighbourhood plan seeks to specifically control housing mix, and as explained above, the development accords with its policies, which now form part of the development plan for Charnwood. It's considered that the proposal overcomes the previous reasons for refusal, as devised by the Plans Committee under the appeal scheme, and it's recommended that planning permission is granted subject to the conditions set out in your officer report. Thank you.
Mr. Crinan, and while you're taking your seat, I'll just explain. I think you understand, it's been explained to you about the lighting system.
Yes.
Green, go. Amber, you've got a minute left. Red, stop. When it does get to 1 minute left to speak, I will press the button I just pressed to remind you. And then when it does go red, it will be an immediate cut-off, I'm afraid. Thank you very much. So when you commence, when you start, when you're ready.
Thank you, Chair. This is my third time I've been here with regards to potential developments on this site. Some of you will have been aware from the first application. Clearly, I've been knocked sideways a little bit. I left Liverpool, where I was working today, about 3 hours or 3.5 hours ago, and midway on my journey, received notification that the appeal decision had gone through today. Now, as a layman who has nothing to do with planning, housing or anything else, given that this decision was made on the first application some 12 months ago or 14 months ago, the appeal was lodged or the opportunity to lodge an appeal was 12 months ago. The visit by the inspectorate was 4 months ago to receive the appeal 2 hours before I'm due to speak on a separate application does somewhat feel a little coincidental. I just want to raise that point. I wanted to thank you for the opportunity for letting me come and speak here today. As I say, it's the third occasion. Those of you who remember, I represent over 20 households who have objected to the initial proposal. And what we've seen over the last 14 months is a series of events that have led us back to exactly where we were 14 months ago. I think I would like to say that with regards to this application for the single dwelling, I was very disappointed to see that the planning department had only notified two-thirds of the objectors or the initial neighbours that were included in the initial application. When I spoke to the planning department, it was because they only needed to notify those people. As we've seen today, the initial proposal was intrinsically linked to this proposal, and I felt it only right that everybody should be notified. So I just want it on record that, as a group of residents, we're very disappointed. From here, where we go, I don't know. Again, I sat here in August. One of the councillors said that we would be sitting, discussing a garage turning into a garage, turning into a house very shortly. In fact, we are. And again, I think the planning department have been complicit in this right from the outset. If you look at the reasons for why the objection or why the refusal was, the initial refusal for the development on that site was due to the number of properties, the scale and the size and the dominance. That remains. What we're looking at today is exactly the same. I get that an inspector has looked at it. And really tonight I wanted to thank those councillors that supported the residents from the outset. A number of you supported us right from the very early application. Some of you changed your mind at the last application in August, which is what you're there to do. I think I just wanted to sum up for the residents. We're very disappointed in the way this has all transpired.
Thank you, Mr. Crennan. I presume you've now finished your... You have nothing else to say?
Other than to say I would like to see this with you on the basis that it's in the same as the first.
I would just like to pick you up on one point, and that was, I think you indicated that you felt the officers were complicit with the inspectorate and others regarding the timing of this. I have to assure you, our officers are not complicit with any other inspectorate.
Apologies.
Please.
Apologies, I probably wasn't clear there. It wasn't in the timing of this. It was the support of the application from the initial stages, in the fact that only certain people were advised of the additional applications that were relevant to this site.
Your points have been noted, but our officers are completely... not complicit and not involved. Thank you very much. Councillor, Parish Councillor Mr. Price.
Is that the right button?
Yes.
Thank you. Just to explain, my name is Roger Price. As said, I chair the Planning Committee for Quorn Parish Council and have done since May of 2019. I live at the other end of the village of Quorn. I know nothing about the local resonance within Warwick Avenue about this application and have no conflict of interest whatsoever. I'm not going to repeat what we sent in to the Borough Council about this. I'm going to refer to it. I'm also going to refer to the officer report, which has been highlighted already. My first point is that the neighbourhood plan comments you've heard are not the whole thing and don't include all the comments we raised to Borough Council. Specifically, policy H5 of the neighbourhood plan refers to, and I quote, safe vehicular and pedestrian access to the site, unquote, which the Parish Council takes to mean the whole site. So it's not just the residents or visitors to the property, but it also includes people traversing the pavement outside the property and between the property and the road. And again, to remind you, it is safe pedestrian access. You've already heard that there is the intention to shortly complete a drop curb, a double drop curb, I think it's referred to. So there's going to be significant disruption to that pavement. I'm afraid that anybody who walks around the village of Quorn, and probably most villages, if not towns, certainly small towns, will know that off-road parking in the front of a house is rarely used as it was intended. I fail to see how developing one house into four homes with no garaging and some designated hard surfacing to accommodate the cars of four houses instead of one is not going to lead to vehicles being parked either on the road or, to make life easy for the road users, half on the road and half on the pavement. This is common practice in the village, and it's common practice in many parts of the country. Whether it's legal or not, we're not here to discuss. But that in itself, as you were not told, but some of you may know, Warwick Avenue is also the thoroughfare for people taking their children to the primary school, St Bartholomew's. So there are going to be many parents and relatives or carers taking children with or without buggies for the accompanying children. There may be small groups of children being unaccompanied going to school on their own because they're encouraged to walk. And they're going to be faced with, eventually, we're not here, we don't object to the building if buildings take place. Buildings need vehicles for delivery, etc. But they're going to be faced with an uneven road surface and probably vehicles obstructing the pavement. And I don't think it's good enough for the Highways Authority to say that because there have been no confirmed, I can't remember the exact quote, but it's referred to in the report, no confirmed accidents reported, therefore it means that the road is safe. I think that would be slightly akin to the medical services currently saying there have been no coronavirus reports in Quorn, and therefore we needn't worry too much about it. And I say that as a retired doctor, not as a trite comment. Thank you. And the other thing is that, and this is the second point. The second point is that, as has already been said by the residents, this is almost exactly the same as the original application. And I can only put my faith in this committee to consider this application, ignoring the appeal. The appeal is about a different application. And if this committee uses the same understanding of the information before it as it did a year or so ago, then I suspect it will reach the same conclusion. Because there's nothing in the report of the appeal that I've read today that says that this committee has to accept the application. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Price. Councillor Shepherd.
Thank you. I'd arrange to speak on behalf of my fellow ward councillor, Jane Hunt, as well. I don't, of course, know Jane's thoughts about the recent appeal decision. I can only guess, but I better begin by saying that. Clearly, we meet this evening with something quite new in front of us, by which I mean an appeal decision that has come through in the past 2 hours and which nobody here, officer or member, has had time to digest properly. I've scanned through it, and there are things that I certainly want to ask about in terms of what it says. But it's there. I ask you to refuse the application in front of you. And I ask you, among other things, for these reasons. Number one, A year ago, unanimously, you refused an application for three dwellings on this plot. The reasons are well known. The effect of granting the application now, and emphasise the application in front of you, is that that plot will contain three dwellings plus the original dwelling and will be cramped and overcrowded and, layman's word, unsightly. I contrast it with what you saw, I guess, this afternoon on the site visit. At the end of the odd-numbered houses on Warwick Avenue, there are two quite new, quite tall dwellings. They stand uniquely by themselves on a unique plot at the end of a row of houses. The application site is embedded within dwellings which are of quite generous proportions in their use of space. The application site will end up with four dwellings of different sizes crammed together. As a committee a year ago, you were persuaded it would be overcrowding. I believe it still will be, and disregarding, for the sake of, if you like, the integrity of thought, the appeal decision, I ask you for the reasons of overcrowding and design to refuse the application this evening. Design. The papers before you are full of references to policies to do with local development plan, neighbourhood plan, the NPPF, National Design Guide, and there in the papers before you are words like beautiful design, well-designed, positive impact. If local planning means anything, it means actually making those aspirations happen. Those aspirations happen. The word acceptable has been used, which I understand may be a standard planning term. To a layman, acceptable sounds like a bit like damning with faint praise. If the genuine aspiration for something better than merely acceptable. I guess we're all a bit taken aback by the appeal decision, but it lies with you, I believe, to refuse because the application, the reasons for a year ago still stand. I really do question the argument that if the Borough Council has 6.41 years housing supply, the addition of one house is so significant as to outweigh all the reasons for refusal. Turning now to the appeal decision. It's a legal decision. It's come through 2 hours ago. What worries me is that planning needs public confidence and perception is really important. And I just think, probably you think too, it'll seem there'll be public questions asked about why information comes through so late, with frankly no time for anyone to digest it properly. But it's a legal decision. Dr. Price, Councillor Price, put it well when he referred to local concerns, and I thoroughly support the remarks that he made. Chair, you may feel this is a lost cause. You may feel, OK, we'll grant this, so what? I think you have a role to play in affirming the aspirations which we all say we have, and we shouldn't just be giving a casual nod to, we should be doing our best to enforce. National policy may be such, the demand for housing is so great, one house more matters. I think here in Charnwood, we need to make our local case. Please refuse the application.
Thank you very much, Councillor. I would just ask one of our officers to just clarify for all of our clarity as to the effect and what the appeal and everything else. We have been given an opportunity to read through it, and we have read through it, but I think it's be better for all of us if an officer clarified what it means about these appeals, which is quite a complicated decision. Thank you.
Yeah, just clarify it. I mean, we handed the decision out on the bus. If members that weren't on the bus would like 5 minutes or a couple of minutes to read through it, we can do that. Now, and just for to help members around the table, the planning decision, you know, an inspector's decision, the local planning authority have no control over. It's made independently and it's issued to us when it's issued to us. It has been issued to us late in the day and we have to consider that. It is a legal decision, and what the inspector found was that, in his opinion, for the reasons that he sets out, he feels that the development did comply with our development plan. Now, if members were to completely ignore that decision, then you could both be at risk of challenge and costs at appeal. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to approve the application. You know, you have to consider what's in front of you, but it is material what the inspector says, and the decision is material, so you do have to take it on board and consider it as part of the planning decision. Members might also, you know, keep in mind as well that whatever your decision is today will be your decision, but the permission that the inspector has allowed will also stand. So that, you know, your decision, if you would choose to refuse today, won't change the inspector's decision and that planning permission that's been put there. So if anybody would like a few minutes, please indicate to chair.
Is everybody okay? If everybody's quite happy with where we are at the moment and needs no further time or no more questions regarding the appeal. Okay, I'll move on. Councillor Snart.
Could I, at this stage, just be very clear what we're actually looking at tonight and what was in the appeal and the property, how that actually is different to what we're doing tonight. I think that would be clear then, that we understand exactly where we are with this one tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Snart. The image on the screen is a slide that shows the appeal scheme for the three dwellings. You'll see that there's one to the west of the 102, which is on the site of where a dwelling is now proposed, and you'll see to the east are the two plots that are roughly the same style house and the same position as the two dwellings that committee granted in the autumn last year. So it's very similar, but as the officers pointed out, the inspector did not agree with the committee's reason for refusal under P182172 and found the development for three dwellings as shown to be acceptable. To switch to the scheme proposed now. Again, you'll see the street scene with the two houses to the left, as I pointed out earlier, that have been permitted, and the proposal now is a very similar dwelling to the dwelling that we granted last year.
Has that made it? Has that helped, Councillor? Thank you very much. I have a couple of speakers. Councillor Ranson.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening. It's a very sad situation that we're in, particularly for the residents in that location, because we were down there and it is an access for the local school. But we have rejected it prior. It went to appeal. The appeal judge did not hold up our rejection. He went and said that it was quite amicable and things like that to carry on. And I just want to ask the officers to clarify for my clarity that the actual house that was supposed to be, there was a garage and now is a house, yes? It's actually been clarifying to me that that house has been given permission to be built by the appeal judge, yes?
No, not the house exactly the same as what's being proposed here. That, you know, the design does differ, particularly the internal layouts, but the principle of a house has been allowed by the allowed decision, but this is different design.
Is it just a three-bedroomed house with parking at the front? Thank you.
Councillor Tillotson.
Thank you, Chair. I believe it's overdevelopment. I believed it in August and I still believe it now. But we are where we are and the applicant has now got permission to build three houses. So, being pragmatic, the decision we have to make tonight is, do we want the applicant to go with the original, the appeal application, or do we want to give the applicant the choice of the new application, or, because that's the position we're in. The applicant can build the original application that we turned down in August. They can do that whether we like it or not. The only decision we have is, do we approve this and give the applicant the choice? And if we prefer what's in front of us tonight to the appeal decision, we can't make them build this, but at least they could build this. So on that basis, being pragmatic, as I think I prefer this to the August decision, then I'm going to support officer recommendation, which doesn't mean these will be built because the applicant has a choice, but at least there's a chance they'll build this, which for me is slightly preferable to what we turned down in August. So I move officer recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Tillotson. Councillor Lowe. Councillor Ranson, did you want to come back?
I'm just amused by it, but could we also, if we are in mind to, at this moment in time, to have this application consented and go with officer's recommendation, can I actually point out on page 25 of the actual report, condition 14, could we have that put in as well, please? Because, to be honest with you, there's families living down there, there's children going down there, so let's have that condition be reiterated, where no development or construction. Number 14, on page 25, that no construction work on the development shall be carried out on the site other than between 8 o'clock and 6 o'clock hours, Monday to Friday, 8 to 1 on a Saturday, and no bank holidays, no Sundays. Please.
Yeah, that's what officers are recommending.
Councillor Gerrard.
Thank you, Chair. What is the distance between the houses? How many metres apart are they?
Just for clarification, Councillor Gerrard, are you talking about the difference between what single house we're looking at now and the bigger house? Because
yes.
That's all we're considering.
Yes.
Not the difference between the other two properties that
no.
have already got approved.
How many metres apart are they? Thank you.
Bit of time, but I think you saw on site today there was a boundary between the two houses. There was a bit of a fence type thing up at the moment. We're getting the slide rules out now, aren't they? Can you explain why you want to know? That might help us.
It's just curiosity, Chair. Are they within the guidelines? Thank you.
Oh, yes. They have to follow the guidelines. They can't. Yes.
Yes, they meet.
They follow recommended.
Recommendations.
The current recommendations of the council under our policy.
That's right, I've got the answer. To the host property at the closest point, it's approximately 2 metres, and to the neighbour at the closest point, because they are slightly different angles, again, it's about 2 metres, side elevation to side elevation.
Councillor Stark, are you bringing something fresh to the discussion?
I think I might be, Madam Chairman. What I'd like to know is that this rests quite a bit on the information we had today, and I'm talking about design now. Design comes up quite often. Could we, the officers just explain the difference in design that we'll see from the street scene? This is particularly the height from the one that we're looking at tonight and the one that was on the appeal. And I didn't see anything about costs in here. Was there any cost involved with the granting of this appeal?
The appeal didn't include any cost claims, so that's a separate application that is open to the parties of the appeal. One wasn't made.
So you'll see from the slide that in terms of the roof heights, that's the original dwelling, number 102, and this is the appeal scheme. So you have the two dwellings to the left with similar roof heights, and that was the dwelling that has been now allowed on appeal with a slightly higher roof than the original 102, but still equivalent to the neighbouring property at 106. The scheme now, if you want me to just revert there, you'll see, again, it's slightly higher than the house roof of 102, but more or less equivalent to that of 106 and in line with the two that were granted last year.
Am I saying that there ain't a lot of difference within the actual two? Is that what we're saying? Okay, thank you. And can I just confirm that this was a decision... The previous one was against officers' recommendation.
Yes, and I think also it's explained in the paperwork. I understand that the brickwork and everything else is all to fit in seamlessly as possible. And then Councillor Tassel.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. I have disliked this development from the start. We started off with a rather fine house in a lovely spacious garden, and now we have this mini estate. I want really to say that I was very impressed by the words of Mr. David Crinian, the objector, and Councillor Roger Price from Quorn Parish Council. And I don't suppose it means anything at all to them that I thought they spoke very eloquently. And I was particularly impressed with the exceptionally eloquent words of Councillor Richard Shepherd. But however much I dislike this application, however much we all may dislike it, I think the reality, as Councillor Tillotson has pointed out, is the inspector has pulled the rug from under our feet. And if I've got to go for anything, I would go for this amended application rather than the previous one. And I wish with all my heart we could turn it down. Yeah. But the reality is we can't. Thank you.
Thank you, Thank you, Councillor Forrest. Councillor Tassel, and then after Councillor Tassel, we have got a proposal and a seconder. Unless anyone's got any further questions of clarity that haven't been answered or something fresh to bring to the discussion, I will then be moving to the vote.
Can I just have point of clarification, please, Madam Chair? If we grant this planning application tonight, the applicant will have three options to build on that site. The first option that has been passed by the inspector, the option that we passed of a garage with games room over, and that one that we're possibly looking at tonight. Is that right? Because he's very, very lucky.
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
On that note, I will now move to the vote. Councillor Tillotson, you proposed acceptance of this application. Councillor Lowe, you seconded it. Could I see all those in favour, please? Those against? Thank you. Well, I think... Is that all? Yes. Okay. I'd like to thank you all very much for quite a...
Sorry, just for the tape to record the vote, that was officer recommendation passed on a vote of 11 for the proposal and 2 against.
I'd like to thank you all very much for listening. It's quite a complicated thing. I will reiterate again, it was a surprise to all of us, officers and councillors, that the appeal decision came through this afternoon. And because it had been received in the council offices before this meeting, it had to be taken into account, and it was material information. So thank you very much indeed. Continue. The next item we have is item P192616-2, which commences on page 28. Now, I have received a request that if Mrs. Elaine Jenkins be given permission to speak to the committee tonight. Unfortunately, due to circumstances, Mrs. Jenkins was not able or knowledgeable enough to get her request into us within the normal time limit. The officers have spoken to me about this, and it is in our gift to see if we would allow Mrs. Lane Jenkins to speak tonight. She has come along, and I would just like your agreement that we welcome her. Thank you. Thank you very much. Mrs. Jenkins, I'll call you after the presentation and in the order. Okay, thank you. It's over to... Yes.
Thank you, Chair. So we go to Sighton Rugby Football Club, Barkby Road, Quinnipra. The application is for an extra 15-metre-high ball screen fence. Just a point of business before I start the presentation. There was a late representation received last night following the circulation and publication of the extras report. That was from Edward Argar MP. We did circulate his comments in full on the bus today, but the benefit of members that weren't on the visit today, I will just quickly summarise what he has said. He says, as the officer's report highlights, the application seeks to address an area of conflict that has arisen between residents with gardens and property which border the cricket ground. He says the situation is a complex one with no easy solution. He says the cricket club is a popular local society which plays an important role in village life. However, residents should not have to endure the risk of damage to property or person. He goes on to urge the committee to very carefully consider and give appropriate weight to the genuine and understandable reservations expressed by residents. So the site forms part of an existing playing field complex used for rugby, tennis and cricket located to the south of Quinnipra. The sports pitches are reached via an access drive from Barkby Road and are served by a small set of ancillary buildings including a clubhouse and cricket pavilion. The cricket pitch itself is located to the north of the complex, immediately to the south of residential development at Greenhedge Lane and Spring Close. The site lies outside the limits to development of the village, as does the relatively new housing development to the north. The site itself is allocated as open space for outdoor sports and recreation within the development plan. There are no other policy constraints, including heritage designations, which apply to the site. In terms of the location of the fencing, so the proposal is to erect a 15-metre-high fence to protect residential properties from cricket balls close to the northern boundary of the site. The fence would be 110 metres in length and would run from the rear of 12 Spring Court along the back of 15 properties, ending at 23 Green Hedge Lane. It will be situated 2 metres south of an existing footpath that runs through the site, which passes along the rear gardens of these properties. The justification for the fence and the background to the application and the history of the site is set out on page 29 of the report. So this is a submitted elevation plan of the proposed fencing. So the fence would be a rigid netting construction supported by painted metal poles and galvanised cross wires at 3 metre intervals. The mesh netting would feature a 15 millimetre square spacings. So whilst the drawings indicate that the netting would be black, it is also possible to provide white or green netting. The post can be painted in any standard colour, and condition 5, as recommended within the report, seeks to secure details of the colour of the net, supporting wires and post prior to the construction of the fence. So we have some sort of indicative drawings which give you an appreciation of the scale of the fence and how it would look within the context of the housing. So the first image is looking southwest. And again, looking the other way, northwest. So in terms of site photographs, this is the existing fence and poles which we saw today, and obviously the netting isn't currently in place in this photograph. And that's looking back towards the residential property and obviously the existing fence and netting. It's one of the current posts and how they are fixed to the ground. These photos were supplied by a resident, which obviously give you an appreciation of the existing fence from their rear aspect, and members will... that are on the site visit today will recall that we did visit the rear garden of one of the properties. And again, for those that are on the site visit today, this is the 25-metre high fence, which is similar in sort of design and construction at Beadles Lake, although different in terms of this is a lattice tower, obviously to support the much higher height of the fencing at this location. But just to give members an idea of the sort of the opacity of the netting. And again, stood under the same one there at Beadles Lake. And this is an example of the proposed fence at another site. So this will be similar in appearance and scale. And again, these are the types of posts and how they are fixed to the ground. So in terms of key considerations for members, the application is a finely balanced one. The proposal would be acceptable in principle, given there would be no material adverse impact on the countryside or landscape character. However, there would be some material impact on the amenity of nearby residents as a result of the overbearing impact of the structure due to its scale and proximity to the houses. This could be partially mitigated by way of design, but would nonetheless remain to some degree, and this would need to be balanced within the planning decision. There would be smaller impact in terms of loss of light, and the development would fail to enhance the character of the surrounding residential area, although it is considered by officers that the proposal would not be materially harmful in respect of these two issues. There would be neutral impact on ecology, as the proposal would not lead to a loss of biodiversity or habitat. Balanced against this, the proposal would aid in the retention of an existing well-used sports facility. It would enhance this and make it more resilient for the future. This point gained substantial weight from the support given in national guidance to the importance of green space and sports facilities for health and well-being. Additionally, the fencing would remove a strong safety concern and allow for the creation of a safer public and private areas for residents to enjoy. For these reasons, on balance, it is recommended that the Planning Commission be granted subject to the conditions as set out in the report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mrs. Jenkins, if you'd like to come to the front, in front of a microphone. I'll explain again the lighting system. Green, it's a you're allowed to talk. Once it goes to amber, I'll sound the buzzer. You have 1 minute left. When it goes to red, I'm afraid you're cut off completely. So if you'd commence when you feel ready.
I've been asked by the residents of Green Hedge Lane and Spring Court to speak on their behalf and share with the Planning Committee our concerns and objection to the erection of the proposed fence. Many of the residents of Green Hedge Lane and Spring Court have been in discussion with the cricket club since August 2019. There were a number of proposals put forward, including the cricket club being moved to a backfield, and although the planning application states that alternative measures have been extensively and robustly explored, we, the residents, have seen no evidence of this. At a meeting at the Parish Council offices in Quenneborough in December, the only option discussed by the cricket club was the erection of the proposed fence, even though Councillor Grimley, at a previous meeting, has specifically asked the cricket club to properly investigate and provide costs for the cricket pitch to be moved. Much to residents' disappointment, no evidence of this was provided. In the planning application of 2016 for the nets currently in place, a condition of approval was the nets and posts be removed at the close of the season and nets be lowered at the end of each game so as to minimise the impact on the amenity for residents. It is a fact that 7 months out of the year, this fence has no purpose whatsoever. So why hasn't a temporary fence and post solution been sought? The solution would meet the needs of the cricket club and it would be a solution residents would find more acceptable. We, the residents, support the cricket club and wish them to remain in Quenneborough and recognise the important part they play in providing a safe and accessible sports facility in the local community. Residents are committed to working with the cricket club to find a solution to the ball strike issue. However, the planning application they have submitted for this overbearing structure will have a massive negative impact on residents' lives who live along Spring Court and Green Hedge Lane. We purchased our homes in good faith, having been told by the developers the existing nets would prevent us receiving ball strikes. If the initial planning proposal had been properly risk assessed and a 15-metre fence being in place then, many of us would not have purchased the homes we currently live in. And why, if in 2016 a 10-metre fence be considered as excessive and potentially impacting on the residential amenity, can a 15-metre fence with enormous posts be now acceptable? If this fence, and it is a metal fence we are referring to and not a net, as stated in parts of the planning application, gets planning permission, this overbearing 15-metre high fence will tower above our roof line. It will also impact on properties that face us and beyond. This fence would be in such close proximity to our homes, it is almost in our back windows, and most certainly those humongous posts will cast a shadow over our gardens and to both floors of our properties. It will most definitely create noise as the wind blows across the fields because it is in such close proximity to our homes. But worst of all for residents, it will be like living in a prison. Last but not least, there is the fact our homes will be devalued for sure. I pose this question to the Planning Committee. Do you think it's fair to inflict this overbearing monstrosity on residents for 12 months of the year when for 7 months it serves no purpose? And finally, it is mentioned in the planning application that there are 10-metre high floodlights on the backfield. I wish to point out that these floodlights point away from the houses and are located some 100 metres away from them, so have no impact on adjoining the field whatsoever. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll clarify some of the points raised afterwards. Mr. Palfreyman and Ms. Alison Freer, are you both speaking, or are you? Would you both like to come forward then, please? And you're sharing the 5 minutes between you.
We are indeed.
Okay. So my able assistant down there is poised. So it's 2.5 minutes each.
Yes.
That's how.
And if I may speak first.
You'd like to speak first.
Please.
All right, Mr. Palfreyman. So the same system will apply.
Right. I'm president of Quenneborough BS Cricket Club. We use the BS in recognition of our roots, going back to our formation in 1958 as a works team for Preman, Hardy and Willis, who manufactured and sold shoes. In 1965, they were amalgamated with other shoe companies into the British Shoe Corporation, and hence BS in our name. Games were played at their headquarters in Leicester Forest East for some years until the site was closed down in 1999. The club then moved to the rugby club site at Quenneborough, and its first game took place in August of that year with only just enough players to fill one team. Since then, we've revitalised the club and now run 12 teams, including junior sides, and was renamed in 2003 as Quenneborough BSCC to reflect where we're now based. The club has now over 150 playing members and is one of the largest cricket clubs in Leicestershire. The club not only draws members from Quenneborough, but also the surrounding villages, towns and the city of Leicester. We're an ethically diverse club and welcome all who are able to offer something towards the club, whether it be as a player, a volunteer or just a social member. The development of the barley fields estate adjacent to our ground and the occupation of the houses close to our boundary last year has shown that there is a big issue of safety, and the existing ball stop net is insufficient to protect the properties and residents. With the help of the ECB, a risk assessment was carried out by Labo Sport, and their recommendation forms the basis of the application, which is also supported by the ECB. If the planning application is passed, the estate developers, Davison Homes, and the ECB have agreed to fund the full cost. The club has seen the draft conditions to be imposed by the council, and if the application is successful and are happy to abide by them, a meeting with the contractor, the council and the club has been tentatively arranged for next week to formally agree the conditions.
Thank you. Ms. Freer, you're going to take over now. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and the Planning Committee. My name is Alison Freer-Jones. I'm the current chair of the Quenneborough Cricket Club. My association with the club has been for the past 15 years since my son, who is on the autistic spectrum, has been a member of the club, who continues to play at the age of 21. The application has come about because the solution we agreed upon when the houses were built has proved ineffective. Despite the 8-metre net, in stray balls have still entered the gardens and damaged properties, so we as a cricket club feel we have no option but to pursue a more robust solution. The liability of someone being injured by a stray ball or worse would fall to the club, even though we were established long before the houses came along. We cannot afford this to carry this liability. The new netting would be superior in appearance into the netting and will be offset from the rear boundary of the properties by a significant margin. It will be mesh, so essentially transparent, and therefore won't cut out light or create solid shadows. I note the officer report points out that not typical of a traditional residential environment, but it is not uncommon where the house adjoins sports facilities. And I'm aware of similar arrangements at Astridby and Bottisford, where it is 10 metres in height, but positioned along the site boundary within the housing development. The club understand there will be an impact, but agrees with the officer report that this needs to be balanced against the health and safety consideration. We believe that this provides a solution that does not impact unacceptably on our neighbours and therefore is a threat to the long-term sustainability of the club if we cannot find a solution. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Freya Jones, is it? Thank you. I now call upon Councillor Grimley. You understand the timing, don't you?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, I think you do.
It's not actually that often that I do call in applications and speak from this side, but I certainly feel that... So I'm just starting if...
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sorry, I just started, but I don't often call in applications, I don't often sit here, but I think this proposal certainly needs very careful consideration from the planning committee, and I know this view is shared by Ed Arger, who's the local MP, who you've had the letter from him earlier. The application, as you know, is for a 15-metre-high wire mesh fence located close to the boundary of the homes on Greenhedge Lane and Spring Court. You're here to decide if this high mesh fencing is acceptable or not. From the outset, again, I'd like to say that the cricket club provides a good local facility and is well supported. On a personal level, I know how dedicated Phil and other volunteers are to the club. On the flip side, the local residents, they have stated that they support the cricket club, which you heard earlier, but they want a solution to the current safety problems that does not severely affect their amenity. In 2016, we've heard prior to the building of the new houses, the cricket club applied for a 10-metre-high fabric net paid for by 106 monies that agreed to provide necessary protection to the new houses. It was the professional opinion of the planning officer at the time that this would not be acceptable in terms of visual amenity to the proposed houses. The applicant agreed to reduce the height of the nets. This was approved, but is also deemed necessary to impose a planning condition for the nets to be lowered before the start and at the end of every cricket match. Planning committee members obviously are aware and have received extensive training that planning conditions are only imposed to enable development to proceed where it would otherwise have been be necessary to have been refused. So that planning condition was put on to make sure that the 8-metre-high fence was not refused. The proposed 15-metre-high wire mesh fence that before you today will be just shy of twice the height of the current removable fabric netting and located very close to the boundary of the houses. It will tower above the houses and be visible for a considerable distance. The depths of the garden of the houses are to a fairly minimal standard, and as planning committee members, you need to consider if this proposal has a significant overbearing effect on these homes. The wire mesh itself will be quite tightly spaced. It will be wire, and it does have very large support posts. I think, in conclusion, I'd hope that members would carefully consider whether or not this 15-metre-high wire mesh fence located very close to the boundary of the houses should be refused. I would say that if members are minded to approve this application, I would ask that you impose a planning condition for any new fencing to be raised shortly before and just after every cricket match as per the current situation. This would certainly reduce the adverse effects on the houses and also provide the necessary safety measures during the cricket matches. This would allow the cricket club to remain also in its current position. So thank you for listening for me today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Grimley. Before I open it up to discussion, we'd just like to clarify that we have received a sample from the applicant of the netting that is proposed to be provided, and straight away the officer will explain it is not wire.
Yeah, I think there is a misunderstanding. There's galvanised wire that goes across. They're the horizontal lines, but the actual netting is fabric. If it helps members, we can pass it round.
And it will be tight.
Shall we pass it down to... Yeah. It comes in three colours, as reported in, you know, as set out in the report as well.
While that's going round, as was explained, it will be ridge very, very tight so that it won't sag or anything. We have a couple of speakers already. Councillor Rand.
Thank you, Chair. Now, I do feel for the residents, but I'd also feel also for the cricket club, because their health and safety ethics have got to be put into play. The other thing is, I see on page 33, Sports England has actually had no objection, and Quinnibar Parish Council has had no objection to the netting going up. The one thing it does actually, I'm asking the officers, is I can understand the residents, their outlook is going to be quite bleak if this is going to be 12 months of the year. Is there no way that this we could have this netting lowered, or is there no way that it can actually, through the cricket club, you know, have it up for the cricket season and then taken down? You can see my ethos behind that. And we could put that in as a condition if the committee were reminded to pass this application tonight.
The proposal in front of you isn't a retractable net. It's a permanent net. So that's what you're considering. There is other systems as set out in the reports that would allow for it to be retractable. There's other safety things to take on board, such as wind speeds and maintenance. But that's not the scheme in front of you. The scheme submitted by the applicant is a permanent scheme, so I've got to ask members to consider it, because that's the scheme in front of you. It's not a retractable scheme.
Councillor Tillotson.
Thank you, Chair. It's going to be a very difficult decision. I'd have preferred, as Councillor Ranson said, that we'd got before us a retractable rather than a permanent netting. Clearly the netting is vital for the continuation of the cricket club, but it is going to be overbearing for residents. It's a pity we haven't got a retractable scheme as an alternative before us. I'm not going to say anything else at this stage. Thank you.
Councillor Snart.
Madam Chairman, thank you. Can I just ask officers, on page 37, the penultimate paragraph, it's talking about alternative measures, and then it says these options have all raised obstacles in terms of cost, time and impracticality that cannot be overcome. I haven't actually seen any information about that. I didn't see it on the website. Have I missed it, or could they elaborate on that? And may I come back?
Full costed alternatives haven't been submitted to the local authority, although they don't have to be. As we're often reminded, we have to consider the proposals in front of us. I know discussions have taken place about relocating the cricket pitch. There is a significant cost to that, and time delay. It would take, the English Cricket Board has indicated, it would take 2 years to set up a new square before it could be played on. So you're looking for a significant delay whilst there's a couple of seasons, as well as the cost. But as you always know, we have to consider the scheme in front of us. So there is other options. I'm not going to say there isn't other options. but they're not before us today. But the relocation was one that was considered. It was ruled out. English Cricket Board have it confirmed that. Obviously, that would also leave an empty, unused field as well. And then, what you know, that has implications as well.
And Sharon, just after listening to that, and I understand there are other alternatives like retractable, and I think I'm taking the point that this probably wouldn't be used for 7 months of the year. And I just feel that I need to know a bit more about the options and the obstacles and such and cost. And at this moment, and I have to, what's in front of me, I don't think I've got enough information to understand it. I understand that there is a safety issue, and that bears heavily in my mind, but also it's the amenity of the people as well. And until I understand a bit more about these obstacles in terms of cost, timing, it could be just the easy way out of this. So I think at the moment I can't support it.
Not saying that you're wrong. I just wanted to make sure that we cover some things. In terms of the retractable netting, there is some implications in terms of its strength. That's set out on page 38 of your report. I'd also, you know, you can make a decision on the application in front of you, and it is, like we've said, it is a balanced decision for members to take. We can't say that we would prefer something different. We have to consider whether the scheme in front of us is acceptable or is not acceptable, and that's the decision we're here today to make.
Councillor Gerrard.
Thank you, Chair. The start of the cricket season is May time. That's when young birds are starting to fly. Would they be trapped? Because they're small enough to be trapped in wires like that. Also, will that cricket pitch be used continually for 20 weeks? That's the 5 months it is in operation. Will it be used continually for those 20 weeks? Thank you.
In terms of the use of the cricket facility, as you've heard, there's 12 teams that play there. It is a very well-used cricket club, but cricket is seasonal, as you've pointed out, so it is heavily used within the cricket season. The officer will pick up on the ecology.
Yeah, so as it's this was raised as a late objection as well, which is that in the additional items report in respect of ecology. And the manufacturer said that bats and birds can easily detect the presence of the netting and negotiate around it. And the council's ecologist has been consulted on this matter and hasn't raised any objections.
Thank you. Councillor Bailey.
Thank you, Chair. Just a few observations and comments, if I may. Firstly, the fact that it has been suggested that the fence goes up purely for the cricket season. Ironically, that is when the residents are going to enjoy their gardens the most. So the overbearing nature, as has been described, is actually going to be felt the most, ironically, if it was temporarily up for 5 months. So I can't see... it's a very difficult situation. It's a very, like has been alluded to, it's a very fine balance. If the cricket club are minded to move the pitch onto a different field, then that makes that field redundant. I can pretty much guarantee that in 18 months' time we'll be having a discussion over a housing development at the same site. The cricket club has obviously been there for 21 years, near enough, as well. So I think it's a very difficult situation indeed. I think the practicalities of a retractable one at 15 metres, I think, is... it's not practical, in all honesty. I think the current situation where it's at 8 metres, I think, is reasonable for a temporary up-and-down fence. But I think at 15 metres, I just don't think that it's going to... It won't have the same strength or tightness. I have to say, like a lot of members around around the room here, it's a very difficult one to quantify. So I just needed to sort of make those observations, really.
Thank you, Councillor Bailey. Councillor Lowe.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be frank, I can actually repeat everybody's observations, but I'm not going to, Chair, because we'll be here till midnight. I think it's too much, Chair. I think it's overbearing. If it was a different application and it was retractable, I'll take what you've just said on board, but if it was retractable, I think it would be more acceptable. I can't accept it in its current form. I know you'll say that we have to take every application as it is. If this was deferred and came back as retractable, I would support it. In its current form, I can't support it. So therefore, I'm going to propose we go against officer's recommendation on the grounds of overbearing to the local residents.
Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to disagree with officer about the wildlife. The birds will get caught up in this fence. As somebody that's been rescuing wildlife for 30 years and looking after it, I've been out several times to netting to get untangled blackbirds. But the thing with this, with the hedgerow and foraging bats at night when it's dark, they can't see the netting. And also birds that migrate, there's a chance that they could fly into it. So it should be retractable. End of the game, take it down. You know, I could go with that, but a permanent thing like that, I'm afraid, it's overbearing and a danger to wildlife.
Just before I pass it over to the officers, can I just clarify for my own consideration, if this committee was minded to go against officers' recommendation, the club is still entitled to use their 8-metre netting, it's the condition on that it is retracted after every practice, match, game. So it's up and down like, I won't save the normal description, but that's what it would be.
It doesn't, the current permission for the 8-metre fence doesn't require it to be taken down all the way. It just requires it to be lowered. And forgive me, off the top of my head, I can't remember the height it has to be lowered to. But it's only at the end of the season it needs to be taken down all the way. And yes, if members were minded to refuse this application, that doesn't revoke the previous permission. Obviously, it's still a cricket club and they've got that permission in place, but we know that net isn't high enough to stop all the balls. So that's fact. In terms of the rights of the applicants, that shouldn't sway members, but just for information, they could submit a new application. If they submitted an application for a net within 12 months, then it would be free. There's no fee because you get a free resubmission. They'd also have the right to an appeal to the Inspector of State, but like I said, that's just factual. It shouldn't have a bearing on your decision tonight. In terms of ecology, just clarify again, we have spoken to our senior ecologist. He is an expert, and that's the advice I can give you. He did look at bats and birds, particularly with bats. He said that the foraging route would follow the line. It's a linear route down the line of the hedgerow, and given that it's the same direction, it would be extremely unlikely that bats would be flying directly into the nets, and he did raise no objections at all to the application. So you should be mindful of that advice from the senior ecologist.
I have two councillors that would like to come back. Is this something new you'd like to bring forward?
Oh, sorry, I haven't seen
them. Sorry. Okay, so would you mind if we go to Councillor Tassel, then Councillor Ranson, then Councillor Gerrard? Councillor Ranson and Gerrard are bringing new information, and Councillor Bailey.
Thank you, Chair. Nobody's mentioned hedgehogs. Now, these nets are lying on the floor. Hedgehogs are a protected species. They're getting less and less. Get them in those nets and they're dead. I've had to go out Roy's nodded his head. I've had to go out to get hedgehogs out of nets where they've tightened themselves up and the nets have cut through them. It's absolutely horrendous, and yet nobody, you're talking about dropping the nets, putting them on the floor, but nobody has thought about the poor hedgehogs. And this is all part and parcel of that area, which is countryside. You cannot get away from the fact that there's a big area where you will get all sorts of wildlife. The other thing that I want to bring up is listening to Mrs. Jenkins and listening very close to what she said. They have put different ideas to the cricket club to come back, to move the pitch so that they don't have to have a fence across at all. It's a massive area, and I noticed that over on the far side was a rugby pitch. Now, they've not come back to her. They've not come back to the committee to give her any ideas. They've not put any weight behind costings or anything. Surely we can't go ahead with this because on those grounds that we haven't got enough information. I'm sorry.
Just to remind members, I mean we've covered this previously, there may have been other options considered, but it's a private cricket club. Yeah. It's the applicant's right to apply for planning permission for what they want to, and we have to determine what's in front of us. And speaking about what's in front of us, we're not talking about a retractable net right now. Obviously, if we are in the future, that's for discussion then. The current net wouldn't have the nets on the floor at any period. They would be up in terms of that point.
Thank you. Now I have three more speakers. Four. Councillor Ransom, Councillor Bailey, Councillor Tillotson, and Councillor Gerrard, and I'm hoping they're all bringing something new to the discussion and something or a clarification, because I would then really like to move on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I'm actually going to go, I'm going to go with a council law, so it gives the cricket club time and the residents to come to some unitary conclusion and actually defer this this item to so that they can go into discussions and find a better and more profitable situation for themselves. And I'm going with what was proposed by Councillor Lowe.
Well, you can... No, to clarify, deferring it would be an option, but there's already a proposition on the table. So we need to take a vote on that proposition before we can accept a second proposition.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Some clarification, if I may. The existing fence was obviously put up when the development was put in place a few years ago. Now, this is in front of us now because this is an option that the cricket club have proposed, or is it the ECB, or is it because there's been a lot of ball strikes on the property? What's brought this about in the first place? Because ultimately, there is an existing fence there.
Okay, so this application has come about because the existing ball stop net hasn't been providing the appropriate protection. So there has been ball strikes to the properties causing damage. So the club needs to look for another solution. It is the club that has applied for the planning permission, but the ECB have supported them in that, in preparing the application, if that makes sense, because they're a small village club, and so the ECB have supported them in doing that. One of the things the ECB did was help them undertake this risk assessment, so a ball strike risk assessment, which based on the league, and I think it's a league, I'm not a cricketer, whatever the league that the players play in, the position, you know, the skills of the players and things, that report has said that a 15-metre-high net is required. So that's where the height's come from. It's come from that ball stop risk assessment that the ECB helped the club undertake or helped the club commission because it was done by an independent specialist.
Just come back very quickly on that. So is there a legal obligation for the club to then mitigate these ball strikes?
I'm not a solicitor, and I might pass that over, so I don't want to get into who would be legally obliged to do it, but obviously it's the cricket club's balls that are escaping from the site, and their own, it's their net that is insufficient in terms of ownership.
Thank you, Chair. What's clear is there is no easy solution. But it's not the cricket club's fault that the houses were built. I assume they didn't sell the land to build for the houses to be built. And the cricket club was here long before the houses. And it's a lesson for us as a planning authority, I think. When we get an application for housing, we should never have agreed for those houses to be built in the way they've been built adjacent to this cricket field. But we did, presumably, and therefore we are where we are. But I suppose I feel more for the cricket club, really, because it's not their fault that they're in this situation. And we've heard that it will take 2 years for a cricket square to be established in another field or another part of this field. So I think I'm going to support officer recommendation.
You're bringing something new, and it comes to no, and then we will close the discussion.
Thank you, Chair. Do we know how many ball strikes have hit the each year? And also, for information, bats do not fly in one. I've got bats in my attic, and they come from all directions, believe me. It's not a line of heads. I've got bats in my attic, honestly. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. As you're aware, Chair and Councillors, I've proposed this application goes against officers' recommendation. But I want to ask officers, would there be an advantage to the cricket club in any way, shape or form by having this deferred?
If you refuse the application for the cricket club to come back in, you know, to reapply, they have to go through the whole process again. Now, whether or not they want a decision so they had a right to appeal, I can't speak on their behalf. If you were to defer it, they might be open to going to look at alternative solutions, having heard your comments round here today. But I can't speak on behalf of the applicant. If you were to refuse it, though, and they were willing to look at alternative solutions, by refusing it, it forces their hand to go through the whole planning application process again. That's all I can say.
So if I could just add, if we did defer, we'd need to defer for a reason. So we've got to have something, reason. And given that alternatives aren't a consideration that determines application... Ms Jackson looks like she disagrees. So.
Yeah, no, I, you can't look at alternatives as in moving, but as long as the description doesn't change, it's a possible amendment. But I don't think we can condition. I mean, it's a bit of a grey area. The applicant has been quite clear that it is the proposal in front of you.
Right. I think this is where we are at the moment. We had a proposal by Councillor Lowe.
Just
a moment. We're going over.
I'm still in discussion, Chair.
No, sorry. We've got 3 points on the table. against officers' recommendation was proposed by Councillor Lowe and seconded by Councillor Forrest. Councillor Gerrard. We'd have to take that first. We then have a deferment proposed by Councillor Ransom. There's no seconder at the moment. Right, Councillor Bailey would second that. We also have
just expression.
I'm willing to propose officer recommendation.
I will second that. Chair.
Seconded by Councillor Bentley. And that is the order we have to go in. Now, this is your decision. Okay, right. Before we go to this, I thought at 5 o'clock this evening this was going to be a straightforward meeting. I should have known better. I'm addressing now to the applicants. I have the right or power, it's in with my power, you followed obviously all the discussions, that would you be happy, and I'm looking to officers now to get the correct wording for this. I'll let Jackie explain. It's an opposition. We don't often go back to you, but as you're in the room, we would like to know your view.
Obviously, there's a consideration currently going around the table of deferral to allow for alternative retractable system. I cannot speak on your behalf, so it's whether you would consider that if the members deferred it, or do you prefer the application as it stands? You know, you want to leave what's on as it stands to be determined tonight.
We've considered both moving the pitch and the retractable option. We've spoken to the contractor who would do a retractable option. But he's saying if the wind is over 30 miles an hour, it will get damaged. And the actual cost is something like another £8,000 or £9,000 on top of...
Sorry, I can't allow you to try and
explain
the reasons for not changing.
We just have to say yes or no.
Know whether you would consider it and you'd look into it, or no, you'd like it. You've done that and you're happy and you want this
right
application.
We have considered it, and we're unable to use it.
Now go back to all those in favour to vote against officers' recommendation as proposed by Councillor Lowe and seconded by Councillor Gerrard. Please show.
Oh, no, sorry. Before we take the vote... You need to clarify some policies to go with that reason.
Okay.
You can't just, you know, it has to be based on the development plan. sorry to panic.
Do we have breakfast here today?
Well, certainly not in this room. Moment. Of course, I should have asked the officer. Sorry? Do you want to? I mean, okay. Sorry, we're talking about again.
We understand the reasons, we just need that link to a policy. So if give us a second and we'll assist you in that, okay?
Okay. No, not at this stage, no. I'm sorry, we're going to finish this item before we have a covenant. But it will have to be very quick. We've got a lot more to get through.
Chairman, Madam Chairman, can I help? It's, in my view, it's CS2. It's amenity. And, CS2. High quality design. And it goes in, goes into amenity.
If we understand the reasons for refusal, it's for its design and its impact on neighbours in terms of over-dominance and overbearing impact. And so that's an amenity reason. Policies that cover new development and impacts on amenity are CS2 and of the new local plan core strategy, and SAVE policies EV1 and CT2, because we have to remember this is in the countryside of the old local plan. So if members need assistance, they're the policies that they should be looking to. I'd also recommend that members delegate the exact wording of the reason for refusal back to members defer the exact reason for the refusal back to the officers.
Okay, are we clear on that? So you're now going to vote against officers' recommendation as proposed by Councillors Lowe and seconded by Councillor Gerrard. And the policies are CS2, EV1 and CT2. All those
in delegated powers
to the officers for the correct wording. All those in favour? Okay. All those against? Okay.
That was a vote 5-4 of the motion, 8 against, so it's not been carried.
Okay. The next motion on the table, proposed by Councillor Ranson and seconded by Councillor Bailey, is that this application is deferred pending further information. All those in favour? What further information are you looking for?
Please.
Thank
you, Madam Chair. I'm concerned about deferral. I would remind the Plans Committee about the last time we did this in similar circumstances to Corn Tennis Club, who were in dispute with their landlord. And we found ourselves in the situation which, if we do vote for deferral, we will avoid this time, where we found ourselves in the situation where one of our officers was acting as arbitrator. That is not what we pay our officers for. I'm not saying don't do deferral, but what I am saying is that we need to be very clear about how we are going to do it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
We also need to know what further information, having heard the response from the applicants to the question we asked, other information you would require. Councillor Ranson or Councillor Bailey?
Can I have some clarification? Because before we actually did the deferral, the actual question hadn't been asked to the, am I correct, to the actual applicant. Now, if the applicant is not in, has a mind not to actually come in an adjudication situation, I am at a bewilderment, because we're actually putting the hand out there to put us as a council, or round the table here, are putting a hand out there to give some help to both. So I don't know. Can I ask some advice, please, from yourselves?
The proposal to defer was before Chair asked a clarifying question. You can withdraw that proposal if you wish, based on the answer of that clarifying question. Obviously we did ask the applicant if they'd be willing to look into other fencing options, and you know, he gave his answer to that.
On that answer, then, we will withdraw our deferral.
C- So that has been deferred. The third proposal on the table is to go with officers' recommendations. If we went with officers' recommendations, I think it is in one of the recommendations, we would suggest that the colour of the netting was not black. Can I just leave it at that?
Yeah, there is a condition as recommended which would require details of the colour of the post, the netting.
Prior
to the commencement, yeah.
Yeah.
The proposal also includes a requirement for the position of the post to be approved by the local planning authority and indicates that, where possible, these should be set on the boundary lines of the properties rather than... So it isn't in the main view of each property, it's set on the boundaries. So they're the conditions, and members can see all the list of conditions from page 39.
Okay, so we have that on the table, and that was proposed by Councillor Tillotson and seconded by Councillor Bentley. Can I see all those in favour? Okay. All those against? Any abstentions?
So that's a vote of 8 for the motion, 5 against, so that's carried and planning permission granted.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Right, so yes, item 3, page 42 of your reports. The application is for two-storey side and rear extensions to an existing small house in multiple occupation at 43 Ashley Drive, Loughborough. Again, with this one, we have two late representations received following the circulation of the members' update sheet yesterday. One is from a local resident who sets out further concerns in terms of the development would lead to a terracing effect within the street scene and cites additional concerns in terms of parking provision and the impact on HMOs in the area generally. These concerns are already covered within the report. And the other one is from Nampanton Ward Residents Group. They have raised a concern with one of the conditions that's proposed, condition 5. It's very similar in its wording to a condition that was applied to a consent on another property within the street for an extension to a HMO. They've requested that the decision is deferred until the applicant submits evidence to show that basically a dropped curb would be acceptable to the local highway authority. In response to that, condition 5 as worded requires the parking provisions as shown on the submitted plan to be implemented prior to the extensions being brought into use. The additional drop curb is shown on the submitted plan, and therefore it's considered that should the extensions be occupied prior to the full extent of the works being implemented, it would be enforceable under this condition. But if members would feel more comfortable, we can insert additional wording so that the condition is more precisely worded to include the dropped curb element. And also, the local highway authority was consulted as part of the application and suggested that condition as worded. And if there was any reason to doubt that an application for a drop curb would be refused by them in any subsequent application, then you would have expected to come to light through that process, which didn't. Okay. In terms of the application, so the application seeks full planning permission for the erection of a two-storey side extension and the erection of a part single, part double-storey rear extension and for associated works at 43 Ashley Drive. The application site relates to the residential property number 43 Ashley Drive, which is situated to the northeastern side the road located within the development limits to the town of Loughborough. Residential properties number 41 Ashley Drive and number 45 Ashley Drive, number 40 and 42 Mountfields Drive join the southeastern, northwestern and northeastern boundaries of the application site respectively. The site is currently occupied by a two-storey, semi-detached dwelling which is attached to the adjoining dwelling number 45. 43 itself comprises an existing house in multiple occupation and is used class C4 of the Town and Country Planning Act. To the front and side is a small-sized front garden and driveway, the latter served by an existing vehicle and pedestrian access off of Ashley Drive. To the rear of the dwelling is a large-sized private amenity space. So this is the aerial photograph of the site, so it's this property here. That's the existing site plan. And again, existing floor plan and elevations. So at the moment, it's a four-bed HMO with three on the first floor and a ground floor room used as a bedroom. These photographs of the site, this is the property here. Again, you can see the curb is already partially dropped, which would be extended to accommodate the full width of the plot. And obviously at the rear, quite a sizable rear garden. So in terms of the proposed site plan, the proposed two-storey side extension will project approximately 2.4 metres from the existing side elevation building line. It will set back approximately 30 centimetres from the front elevation building line and will lie flush with the rear northeastern elevation. Its height would be approximately 5.7 metres to the eaves and 8.4 metres to the ridge. Its material treatment would include a mixture of brickwork and render under a tiled roof which would match the existing dwelling house. The proposed single-storey element of the rear extension would project approximately 3.4 metres from the existing rear elevation. It would have a width of approximately 8.5 metres, aligning the northwestern boundary of the application site, and that's shared with 45, number 45 Ashley Drive, and would lie flush with the southeastern elevation. Its height would be approximately 2.3 metres to the eaves and 3.2 metres to the ridge. The proposed two-storey element of the rear extension would sit centrally within the rear single-storey extension. Its height would be approximately 5.7 metres to the eaves and 7.2 metres to the ridge. Again, the materials would match the existing dwelling house. As part of the proposed development, the existing HMO will increase from a four-bed to a six-bed, and as such would remain within the C4 use class. The proposal also includes hard surfacing to the existing front garden in order to provide three off-street parking spaces. To service the hard standing, it's proposed to widen the existing vehicle and pedestrian access and install additional drop curbs. So these are the internal floor plans. As I said, so the single-storey rear extension with a larger kitchen dining area and then an additional bedroom at ground floor level with bathroom. And then at first floor, there would be the enlargement of this bedroom here, a bathroom WC and the second additional bedroom at the back. And again, they're the proposed elevations. So in terms of key issues for members to consider, the proposed development relates to the extension of an existing dwelling house, which is occupied in connection with an established HMO use. The principle of undertaking alterations or extensions to an existing dwelling is acceptable in principle. The main issue to be considered in this case is the impact of the provision of additional bedrooms at the property, the design, the impact on residential amenity and highway safety. So whilst it acknowledges that it's a large extension proposed, it's considered acceptable in design terms and would comply with policies CS2 and EV1 and H17 and the advice contained within the design SPD. Only the side extension would be visible from the street scene, and overall it is not considered that the proposal would cause harm to visual amenity and the character of the area. With regards to neighbouring amenity, the development complies with the provisions of policies CS2, EV1 and H17 Again, along with the advice given in the design SPD with regards to loss of light, privacy and outlook. Whilst concerns have been raised with regards to the over-concentration of HMOs, the dwelling has established use as a C4 HMO for between 3 and 6 people, which is a significant material consideration in this case. Given this context and for the reasons set out in the report, it is not considered that there are sufficient grounds to justify a reason for refusal on neighbouring amenity grounds. In terms of the noise transference between properties, there is the potential for noise to travel through party walls. However, this proposal is for an extension and does not change the use of the building. Furthermore, the proposed extensions do not share any party walls with the adjacent property and as a result would not materially increase levels of noise. The proposal will provide for 3 off-street parking spaces in accordance with SAVED policy TR18. The local higher authority raised no objections. And subject to planning conditions, it is considered that the proposed development would not give rise to material harm in respect to matters of highway safety. The application is therefore recommended for approval as set out on page 55, and again, obviously, with that slight amendment to condition 5, should members wish to. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillor Parsons, I believe you're here on behalf of Councillor Smedovich, who called the application in. In the timing sequence to what you do, I?
No.
Thank you.
Page 48 of your planning consideration shows 2 of your considerations are noise and general disturbance and highway matters. I will deal with noise and general disturbance first. Interestingly, 2 doors down in an almost identical house at number 39, we have 4 years ago an inspector's report for a change of use to an HMO for an almost identical house, which would have brought into being almost as many bedrooms, same number of people as this will bring into being. And I'd like to quote what the inspector said. It's extremely relevant. This was at a time when the council claimed only 20% of HMOs or student residences in the street. 20%. The high concentration of HMOs and student accommodation nearby is already having a negative effect on local residents who have raised a number of issues relating to the existing levels of nuisance. It goes on to quote that local residents referred to a total of 320 recorded incidents of antisocial behaviour by students in Ashley Drive in the academic year. If you feel that things might have got better in October 2019 in Ashley Drive on separate occasions, 10:58 noise from halls, 10:35 noise from halls, 11:23 screaming, shouting, music, halls, loud music party, halls, 10:09, shouting, screaming, 11:15, disturbance, 10:09, 2 calls to police, disturbance by students, Ashley Drive, 11:26, Ashley Drive, 5 calls made to security that evening. It goes on. I could mention the £1,000 damage to a long-term resident's car, the fence knocked down at the party, and calls to security. That's just October. I haven't made it beyond the 19th yet. Just October this year. At a time now when you are quite happy to say the student and HMO percentage is over 50% in your current report. The inspector's report ended with the current phrases. The main issue in this case is the effect of a change of use to a property where 5 more students would have considerable impact on the residential character of the area and the living conditions of surrounding occupiers, having particular regard to the concentration in the area. The inspector cited incomers to an established neighbourhood and the cumulative effect which affects the imbalance, makeup, and the detriment and well-being of the community. CBC at the time were claiming a concentration of students at 20% in Ashley Drive, and the report cites 50% in the current report that you have in front of you. If noise and general disturbance is not enough of an issue for you to turn down this application, the issue raised on the highways matters at the end, which I know was submitted by a resident quite late in the process. LCC state that planning permission does not give you approval to work on the highway. And the planning application as it currently stands says that for the facility to be used, the drop pavement and parking spaces must be done and finished. Interestingly, we do have a similar development in the street where those conditions were applied and have still not been carried out and have still not been enforced. So we haven't done ourselves any favours in, as my colleague spoke earlier, planning needs to give the public confidence. I'm very unclear where we've done that in this instance and in the previous track record in Ashley Drive. Policies are there to help people. Policies are there to help make decisions. So I want to end by giving you the effect on the real people who live next door in Ashley Drive. My family is exhausted. The last few weeks are really taking a huge toll. The words I spoke earlier from the inspector's report was when CBC was claiming 20% saturation of that road. And we are now happy to accept it being over 50. And we wish now to add more. I would ask you to turn down this application and give the public some confidence. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor.
Yeah, just a few points of clarification. The information that we have suggests that there are 28.1% HMOs within a 100-metre radius of this particular site. And in terms of the number of incidents of antisocial behaviour, the information, again, that we have, in terms of Ashley Drive, the report says that there have been seven incidences within the last 12 months.
Thank you very much. I have a number of speakers. Councillor Bailey.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I think most members around this table will echo that we're not a great fan of HMOs, but this is a lawful HMO already. This already has a certificate of lawfulness. I actually can't see a reason why we should refuse this under planning law. I do feel that we do need to add the additional wording in on the conditions about the drop curb and that it is enforced. I am mindful just to go with the officer's recommendations as long as that wording's put in, Madam Chair.
Proposal, Councillor Bailey. Thank you. Do we have a seconder?
I'll second that.
Not before construction. The wording of the condition says occupation, not construction.
As I'm seconding this, I want clarity on my behalf here. Is it, can we actually put any other conditions in if the actual building didn't look today as if it hadn't been even erected? You know, it hasn't. Can we put in hours of actually working and times as well as a condition? If we've got a mind, if you know, if the committee is minded to go with the officer's recommendation that myself and Councillor Bailey have proposed.
If members are minded to include that as a condition, obviously I think you'd need good reason to. Obviously hours of construction would be covered by environmental health legislation as well, so there is that fallback position. But obviously it is within members' gift as to whether they want to impose that condition or not.
I would like that condition, I would like to put that as part of our recommendation to go with recommendation, officer's recommendation, because there are families down there, and listening to the ward councillor, obviously, as Councillor Bailey said, there's already a permission on it for an actual HMO. We can't go against that, but what we can do is actually make the situation a little bit more comfortable for the residents in that location.
Councillor, do I understand that you would like the similar hours that we have put on other application, which I believe... the officer...
Yeah, so the standard condition that we usually apply would be no construction work on the development shall be carried out other than between the hours of 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. Monday to Friday and 8 in the morning until 1 p.m. on Saturday, and there should be no working on Sundays or bank holidays.
Is that agreeable?
Yes, I'm agreed with that. I don't know what the proposal is.
Thank you.
And with the drop curb, can we not put that in?
It's already in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. When we were shown the photo of the back view, I couldn't see any other extensions. You know, the colour picture from the garden. I couldn't see any other extensions along that way. So is it in keeping or will it be a new one? There's coal sheds, the old coal shed and toilet roughly, but there's no extensions like they're going to do. I couldn't see any. Are there any? Thank you.
Yes, so you can see on the picture here, in terms of the front and side elevation, there's a very similar extension on this property, two doors down. On the back, you can't see, just out of shot, but again, the same property has had a very similar rear extension. You can just see the roof slope there.
Councillor Tillotson.
Thank you, Chair. If this was a family home, I quite like what they want to do with it, actually. I think it would make a very nice family home, but it's not a family home. It's currently a C4 HMO, and on page 47 of the report, it says that it's been confirmed that a HMO licence will be required if the resulting HMO is to be occupied by five or more persons, and they want six people to occupy this. So they're going to need a licence to extend. Now, we already know that whether it's 50% or it's 28%, and clearly we've gone above the 20% threshold. We've heard what the inspector has said about the area, and so I think this is a step too far for this street, and therefore I propose going against officer recommendation.
Yeah, can I just come back on clarity? That's accepted your position. The proposal is already a HMO. It can have six people living there already. That means that they can either share or they could do an extension under permitted development or whatever it is. They could do that without planning permission. So you're not considering a change of use here. You are considering whether the appearance of the extensions and the impact on the extensions against the street scene and the neighbours is acceptable. You're not considering the use because the use isn't changing.
Why does the report say something different then on page 47?
Licensing is different to planning permission, as you know. You need planning permission. You have lawful planning unit uses, and then you have licences. They're different parts of legislation. So the licensing that you're referring to in the report is under the Housing Act. That's separate. They would need to go through that separate process. We've already spoke to our licensing people. They've raised no objections, so one can assume that that licence isn't going to be a problem. We're looking at planning law today, and the planning law, the lawful use under planning, is for 3 to 6 people living in that house. If it was to go above 6, then it would change its use class and require a change of use application.
Let's start.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I get that the design and everything seems to be in line with what we actually want through policy. Could I just ask officers, what weight, if any, should we give to the increase in the number of residents in this HMO? What I'm trying to get at is that we've got a level of noise and antisocial behaviour. This is looking probably at two more people or residents going into this accommodation. Should there be any weight given to that, or are we purely looking at the actual design and how it fits in with the street scene?
Members, the extension might make it more likely that six people will live there, but the use that's already permitted will allow six people to live there. So you're not, it's not changing the, it's not materially changing the use of the building.
Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Chair. Is the concreting over the front garden a factor in things? There's no remark from the Environment Agency. It's just that with last week's floods, and I was watching the BBC News, the Environment Agency came on saying that our surfacing in front gardens is a factor now. I just wondered if this was anything we could sort of, you know...
No, for to hard surface that frontage, it doesn't require planning permission. It would be permitted development, providing it drains into the site and not into the highway. So that the drainage will be, they'll have to put that not into the highway, like I said. Or a soakaway, but they could do it without planning permission. Not in this situation because, well, they wouldn't be asked anyway because they're not a statutory consultee for this type of application, but you can hard surface your front, you can put down hard surfacing to a certain size without planning permission at the moment.
I have Councillor Forrest and, yes, he and Councillor Lowe, and then I shall draw this to a conclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to say I don't like this application very much at all. I am concerned about the number of HMOs that are already in Ashley Drive, and I understand what the officer said about HMOs and how many the different kinds are allowed to have, but I think that we ought to have now sought to have regard to the cumulative effect of the number of HMOs we have in any one street. I think about design, I think it is an overdevelopment of that site. It is an ordinary sized semi-detached, and it is now going to have, if we give permission, a very large extension on the side that is going to go right up to the border of the next house. It is a very large extension. I think it's too large. Impact on residential amenity. I don't quite know what's meant by that term, really, but what I'd really like to know is where are the bins going to go and how are they going to get them? They're not going to get them round the back, are they? They're just going to be left there at the front. And with the temptation that is always offered to students in my ward to use the wheelie bins to play at chariot races at 3 o'clock in the morning at the end of term. It does happen. And this brings me to the next issue, antisocial behaviour. Most students are good kids. They don't cause anybody any trouble. They're here to work and get a good degree, but nevertheless there are some for whom, you know, 3 years at Loughborough is a chance to go a bit mad, and it is ordinary residents in some areas. I think we're looking at one here, have a miserable time with student neighbours, and There are just too many in that street. I don't feel comfortable about giving planning permission to impose more possible antisocial behaviour. And on highway matters, well, it says that they're going to put three cars at the front of that house. I don't believe it. I don't. They're going to have to